This morning I'm going to talk about something that I don't think that in all the time I've been here, and very seldom over my time as a Christian, have I ever heard very many people speak publicly about what I'm going to speak about today. And it's reflected in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, where it gives us an imperative command. Be angry, but what? Do not sin. Now, when you listen to that verse just on the surface, there's a bit of irony about that verse. Because when you look at the sin of anger, the sin of anger is totally contrary to that verse, isn't it? When it tells you to be angry, and it tells you to be that way. And so when we take a verse like that, we have to understand the whole nature of what anger, what's all involved with in anger, and we have to understand the command in the light of how it works its way out in the life of a person. And we ask the question, is it wrong to be angry? And the answer to that question is absolutely no. Why? Because every one of us needs to have a righteous anger in our life. If we don't have that righteous anger, we can never be concerned about the things that we see out there that is causing our society to be destroyed. And if we take a flippant attitude towards that, oh, it's going to happen. No, we should hate the evil that is happening. And we should love the righteousness of that anger, in the sense that we hate what God hates. And when we think of righteous anger, I can see at least three individual instances of it in the scriptures. There might be more, but I think in the lives of three different people. First is found in the life of David. You remember when David chose to stay at home? And while he was staying at home, he was up in his palace, and he happened to look down into the valley. And what did he see? He saw a beautiful woman down there, and he lusted for her, didn't he? And he called that woman. And he called her to his self, and what happened? He took her and had a relationship with her, had a child by that woman, and God condemned him for that. And their relationship went on for over a year before the prophet Nathan finally confronted David, and he said to David, he told a story about a poor man who had everything taken away from him, and he was alluding in his illustration to the man Uriah, who was the husband of Bathsheba. And all the time that Nathan is talking about this instance, David is really getting worked up inside, isn't he? And then finally, when he finally comes to the place where he gets through to David, he says, "That man that did all of that should die." Now, was David righteously angry? Yes, he was. Because he was upset and angry over an injustice that had been done to somebody who did not deserve that injustice. And so then what did he say? Nathan said, "You are the man." And if you read Psalm 32, you go through the wonderful true story of what forgiveness is when somebody commits a sin. David expresses in Psalm 32 how wonderful it is to know the forgiveness of God because of my sin. So David was expressed righteous anger. The second person I can think of that expressed righteous anger is the Lord himself. I don't know if you remember when you're reading Mark chapter 3. Jesus is in a synagogue, probably somewhere around Galilee. And while he was in that synagogue, there were several Pharisees inside of that synagogue. And there was also a man who had a withered hand. And what was happening, Jesus knew the thoughts of all of those Pharisees that would judge him, because they were looking for him to heal that person, and when he would heal him, he would be healing him on the Sabbath, and according to the Pharisees, would be breaking the law. So Jesus had the man stand up, and then he asked him the question, is it all right for a man to heal, do good, or to do bad on the Sabbath? And the Pharisees couldn't answer. And so then he says that he immediately healed the man, but he says he looked upon those Pharisees with anger. That's only one of two times, or actually possibly three, because there's probably two instances where Christ cleansed the temple physically. So Jesus was righteously, David was righteously angry, and it was right to be angry. Jesus was, but I have another instance of that anger with the Apostle Paul. Remember when Apostle Paul was on his second missionary journey, and he left Titus and Timothy and told him to go to Corinth, and he was left alone in Athens. And he was up in the Areopagus. And then they took him up to the top of the Areopagus, and they started wondering. But it says, while he was there, he started looking around, and he began looking at all of the idols that were depicted in all of those places around the Areopagus. And the King James uses a word and says he was stirred up inside. But what does it mean to be stirred up inside? That word that he uses there to speak about being stirred up inside is the same word that's used in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5b, where it says love. In the King James, it says love is not easily provoked. And other translations translated it that word differently. But the point of it is, it's the same word that Paul uses in 1 Corinthians that he uses there. And the word actually means that he was so irritated by what he saw that he became angry inside because of what he was seeing with all of those idols. So the first thing we need to understand about anger is that all anger is not wrong. It's just what the person ends up doing with the anger that becomes wrong. And a good Bible verse, I can't think of where, maybe somebody could tell me where that's at in the book of Romans. I thought about that. He says, when he tells us to do good, he says, do good to a man. He said, but for vengeance is what? Mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. When you exercise vengeance on another person, what are you doing? You're exercising anger on that person and hatred towards that person, right? So that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about the sin of anger. And when you stop and think about the sin of anger, even righteous anger, you ever get upset with somebody and irritated with them? We like to use the word, we like to say, boy, that person just irritates me to no end. Have you ever said that? What are you saying inside of yourself, though, when you're saying that? He irritates me to no end. You're more than just upset. You're angry. Inside. You're angry inside when you say that about the person. I'm irritated by it. That's what that word means there, that Paul used. When you're irritated, you're angry to the point where you're not thinking the right thing. That's the whole point of what I'm trying to say. All right? Now, so it's not even righteous anger if it is not dwelt with properly can lead to sin. And each person has a responsibility to control his anger. How do we know that? When Paul speaks in the book of Galatians, he gives two different topics there. He gives the fruit of the Spirit, and what is it? What's the other? The lust of the flesh, the lusts of the flesh, are all sinful things. Fruit of the Spirit are all godly things. And when you look at those categories, anger and wrath and malice all fit into those lusts of the flesh. When you look at the admonition that Paul gives, he gives us an example to tell us that what our responsibility is there. First one's found in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5, and I want to center on the last two parts of that verse. And I want to translate that. I want to read that verse as I understand it, as I would translate it literally. When he's talking there in the middle part of that, some of your translations say love is not easily provoked. Who has a different version of that verse? Love is not easily provoked. Anybody have an NIV? Bob does. What's that verse say? Love is not what?
Spite.
1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5b. Love is not easily provoked, the King James says.
It is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered.
Is not easily what?
Angered.
Easily angered. Okay. Now, in my opinion, when you translate that, they're saying they're putting the word easily in there, because easily is a what? It's an adjective that describes that. That word doesn't, if you take that word literally, like I say, it's only used two different times. This case, it's a passive verb, and if you literally translate it, it goes like this. Love is not being irritated or stirred up by anger. Although the point that Paul is talking about there is if you're acting out of love, you will not come to the point where you will be so provoked and stirred up that you will sin. Period. It's a command, in a sense. Love is not being. That's a process. And if we're irritated, when you start to get irritated, that's a sign that you and I should look at and examine our life to see what's going on inside of our life as to why we are being irritated. If it's for a legitimate reason. And then we need to learn to begin dealing with that emotion. Anger is one of the most powerful emotions that you can ever have in the human experience. And you can see that where all these recent killings, every one of them have been motivated by an angry person who wants to get even with somebody else. They want to take it out on everybody else. And then they just do it, and they end up destroying numerous lives by their anger. And look at the second part of that verse, though. Here, the second part of that verse is this. Love is not calculating the bad. Stop and think about yourself when you get irritated. And I get irritated. And we look at something that's happening to us that's bad. And we end up becoming irritated. And we start looking upon that what that person did to us. And we begin singling in on that particular issue of it. And it causes us to make a judgment about that person, doesn't it? Listen to what the NIV says to this. And I would agree with this translation. Here's what the NIV says about that particular verse. It keeps no record of wrongs. So if you're acting out of love, and I'm acting out of love, I will not be irritated to the point where I want to sin and end up and injuring a person. Secondly, I won't look at the person's sin. What does Jesus say when we become judgmental? If you look at the eye and the mote is in the splinter that's in the other person's eye, and you don't see the mote in your own eye. Isn't that what happens a lot of times when we make judgments about people? we can never get into their heart. We make judgments about them, and we just pass it on, and we do that. That's totally wrong. And here's the thing. If you're really, truly loving, you won't be irritated to the place where you'll be provoked to anger, and you're not going to keep a record of wrongs. Now, I'm telling you that. That doesn't necessarily mean I always do it. But that's my responsibility, isn't it? Regardless of whether I do it, it's my responsibility always to do that. Would you agree? All right. Look at the next verse that I have. Psalm 38, 37, 8. Psalm 37, 8. This is the psalm that's written by David. Look how he starts this particular chapter off. Do not fret because of evil workers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity. Now, when most people think about fretting, it says, I wish that wouldn't have happened. That's what we think about fretting. But this word for fret is much more stronger than the idea of fretting about something or being upset about it. It's a word that describes the anger that Cain had towards Abel and what happened to Cain and Abel. It was an anger that was so strong that it caused him to kill his brother. And it's a word that means to literally be hot with anger, burning, to be furious inside. And here's what he says in verse 8, and that's the verse that I wanted to single upon. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Literally, here it says, do not fret, but I'd say, do not become furious. It only causes what? Remember the last time you got angry? Remember it? What happened when you get angry? Did you have a happy encounter? No, you don't have happy encounters when you get angry, do you? It's all bad. And when you're the one that does it towards an individual, you're the one that's causing the harm. And I'm the one that's causing the harm. And I can't think of the numerous amount of times where I have done that to the people that I love the greatest. As my kids were being grown up, I didn't always respond to them in a way that was kind and gentle. And ask yourself in your own spirit, are you striving? I'm not asking you are that way always, but I'm asking you to have the desire to strive to be that way. That's what we should be. That's what we should be striving for, isn't it? And then the last verse is found in James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. Wherefore, my brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the anger of a man is not working a righteousness of God. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Even righteous anger, if we're right in that search, and we get angry in the way that in we hold something against somebody, and we manifest that anger, it becomes sin. And if it's not righteous anger, it's sin to begin with, isn't it? So righteous anger can become sin, and every one of those verses tell us that we have a responsibility to put that out of our life. If we're going to have any kind of peace and any kind of settlement in the spirit, this issue has to be dealt with in a godly and wonderful way. Now, what I'm going to do is to come to the last part of the message, and I want you to turn in your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. And the rest of our time is going to be spent there. I think Esau really knows me. He knows everything, not every time, but the last time I didn't do it so bad. But every time that my nose starts to, it's terrible, isn't it? The nose starts to run. But that's where we're going to spend the rest of our time. There are so many examples. I'm only going to give you a couple or a few that speak about anger and the tendencies that we have and what we can do to learn to get that anger under control and to be responsible for that anger. Hold yourself responsible when you read these verses and I read these verses for your anger. The first one that I want to go to is Proverbs chapter 11. And I want to read verse 17. And here's the first thing that we need to look at. The merciful man does good for his own soul. But look what he said. But the one who is cruel, what? Troubles his own soul. When you and I are angry at somebody and the other person is on the other end of that anger, that person that's on the other end of your anger, whether it's the one you love the greatest or not, isn't very happy at what you are doing to that person. All right. When you stop, think about the contrast that he's making there. That's what a proverb is. Pushes two truths aside one another and comes up with a conclusion. And that verse admonishes us that kindness must prevail in our life or we will never be at peace with ourselves. Are you and I manifesting a love that is kind? Begin with. You will never have somebody argue with you over the fact that you're kind to them. They might dispute the fact and be upset in an ungodly way, but nobody will ever dispute when you're kind to them. But when you're angry at that person, there's a division there, isn't there? When that happens, right? Second verse. Proverbs chapter 14. Look at verse 16 and 17. A wise man fears and departs from evil. That word, and he says, but the fool. Here it uses the word rages, but it's the word that uses the idea of when somebody encounters an issue, rather than to go agree with that issue, they pass it over. And what he's trying to say here is that a wise man fears and he departs from evil, but. But a fool passes over what he needs to do to make that issue right. And here it says he's self-confident. You ever notice how many times you find when you see a person that's angry, they're arrogant and bold, and they don't care about anybody else? That's one of the things I grew up in an environment where I was in a very moral environment, but yet in a sense, my father was one that would just really, for the longest time I had to struggle. And even to this day, at times I still struggle with that sin of anger because my father would just strike right out. And he wouldn't give any consideration for what is wrong. He just passes over what he's doing for what was wrong. And he just does that, and then he ends up hurting people. And see, that's what I learned to do as a pattern of my life. And but when I learned to know, to realize my responsibility of being in control of myself and my life and my anger, that sin began to subside in me. It's not completely conquered. I don't know if we always go completely conquer that sin. But we have the ability to gain control over something like that, don't we? And look at the second part of that verse where he says in verse 17, a quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. I don't know anybody that's ever had anger inflicted on them that likes the person that's inflicting that anger. Do you? At the moment that it's happening, I'm saying. Right? Whether it's a woman or a man. And a woman can do that just as much as a man. Right? And they can inflict harm when they instead of doing that. But the whole point of it is that if it allows itself to manifest, you're not going to have a good relationship. The relationship will be put on the back burner at times, sometimes, till we get things right. And the only way to get something like that right is what? If we confess our sins, he is what? Faithful and just to forgive us and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Okay? Now, look at the next verse. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 29. He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts what? Folly. What's the NIV say in that verse, Bob?
Whoever is patient has great understanding, but the one who is quick-tempered displays folly.
Okay. All right, now here's what that word literally means when it uses the word impulsive here. The one who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but the one who is short of spirit, otherwise he doesn't think before he does things, or she doesn't think before she says things, and she ends up injuring and creating what? Folly. That's why James commanded his readers to be slow to speak, quick to hear, swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the anger of man is not working out the righteousness of God. So when you think of that verse, a wise man knows ahead what anger produces and acts with his will and not his emotions. If you act upon your emotions when you're encountered that as anger, you're in big trouble, aren't you? And I'm in big trouble. Because the emotions are going to be the determining factor. Whereas I don't have an alternative as far as God is concerned to be obedient. you're either obedient or you're not. Right? Alright, now Proverbs chapter 15, verses 1 and verses 2. Okay. A soft answer turns away wrath. But what? Here, King James says grievous words, harsh words. Nobody likes to be treated harshly, do they? Harsh words will always provoke a feeling inside of me that we want to strike back. We want to hurt back, right? And what is, if we're acting out of love, what are we doing? We're not keeping any records of wrongs. If we're going to respond the right way that God wants us to respond, we respond in the way that He tells us to hear. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pour out foolishness. Let me read you a passage that I copied a long time ago. Not a long time ago, but a while ago. I don't know if I can find it here. You know what? I feel badly for that. I'm gonna have you turn to that verse. I got the verse. Hold your finger here and turn over to Ecclesiastes. That's just before the Song of Solomon. Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, chapter 10. Beginning with verse 12. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. Stop thinking about somebody that's angry. Are they under control? Are they expressing love? And he says, the words of a mouth begin with foolishness and end up talking raving madness. A fool multiplies his word. No man knows what is to be, and who can tell him after him? Isn't that what happens? When you can sense a person, have you ever tried to stop a person from doing something you know that's going to hurt them? Have you ever done that? My wife does that with me occasionally. She knows that I'm speaking out of turn. And she knows that just recently, my wife and I went out to eat with somebody that was close in our family. I won't tell you who it was. That person was trying to get directions to this place, and I knew that the directions were that person was giving me to get to that place were wrong. And I knew right away that it was wrong, and I started to express myself, and all of a sudden my wife reaches over and touches me on the, and I knew right there, you shut up. So you know what? I shut up. And you know what happened? I didn't have a confrontation. And you know what? The relationship I have with that person is beautiful. That's the whole point when we express anger. Terrible sin, isn't it?
Just a minute. I got another verse. Look at verse 8 of chapter 15. Oh, I'm gonna have to skip forward because I don't want to go over time. Look at verse 8 of chapter 15. Wait a minute. Did I say 15, 8?
I copied the wrong verse down, so I have to apologize. I can't do that. But let's go on to the last verse.
Verse 18.
Is it 18? Yeah, I think you might be right. That's right. A wrathful man, what? Stirs up strife. But the one slow to anger, and the word for allays there is the idea quiets. Contention. Or disputes or strife. You can't expect you responding in anger to ever have a solution to it.
But when you act in the way that it's telling me to act here, and I act in the way it's telling me here, I have every right to believe that maybe God will allow something to happen to where it will come out right, right? But if I'm angry, it will never come out right. And I'll never be at peace with myself, will I? And the last verse that I want to read, I'm skipping over a couple, and it's found in chapter, let me just real quickly, it goes two verses, and then I'm going to quit. Chapter 17, verse 14. The beginning of strife is like releasing water. Now what it's talking about is looking at a water basin that's captured rainwater to store water for storage. And then what they would do is they would release the water and the reservoir in the water. But the whole point of this proverb is that once the water's released, you couldn't do anything about it. The well's overflowing. And look what it says there. It's like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel begins. You want to deal with anger? And you sense it coming on? Choose not to ever engage in it. No matter whether somebody wants to do it at all. You just choose to not do that. The last verse is found in chapter 30. I didn't get through several of these, but that's okay. But it gives us a flavor of what our responsibility is. Chapter 30, verse 32. If you have been foolish in exalting yourself, have you ever done that? Or you devised evil, put your hand to your mouth. For as the churning of milk produces butter, and wringing the nose produces forced verb. Well, now just think of those two illustrations. I'm not a farmer. I've never made butter. But I've seen cheese being made. And what when you do, you force it, don't you? Butter is only produced by putting force on it. And I can remember many times, one time I was playing baseball in a little street that we lived on, a guy hit a pop-up, and I was going like that, and all of a sudden I went up there, and I didn't put the glove, and the ball hit me straight in the nose, and you know what happened? My nose started bleeding profusely, because the pressure of that ball upon that caused that blood to be released. And it's the same way when you do that with butter. It is inevitable what will happen. He says, so the forcing of wrath produces strife. That is a sin that I was so struggled with most of my life, because I learned that it was not people that did it, didn't even think about it. I could do that sin long before I was a Christian and never be concerned whether it was right or wrong. But when I became a Christian, I started to feel guilty every time that it happened. And I guess the advice that I would leave every one of us is it's all right to be angry. But we need to learn to control that anger and to live a life and follow the steps that we need to follow to put ourselves in a position so that we can be successful in dealing with that particular sin. I'd like to ask Thomas Fisherell if he would close in a word of prayer, please.